welcome to your Friday postgame. I am your host, not as always, but frequently, Malcolm Fleshner. With me, of course, is the beloved Dave Kohler. And oh my God, who is this? What's going on?
Hey guys. I'm on the postgame show 4 out of 5 days every week.
Right. Crazy.
And the whole point
like
is to save
this.
You 1 hour, half an hour a week of time. And yeah. Now this week you don't get that.
You couldn't tell okay. For weeks and weeks and weeks. Anna has been badgering me and emailing me and texting me. Now, when am I going to get up on Friday postgame? When am I going to get up on Friday postgame? And I'm like, who is this? Who are you again? I'm sorry.
So just very quick inside baseball. Malcolm sends out emails asking, you know, either me or John or JR, sometimes even Cenk, to fill in if someone's missing for the pre-recorded Friday postgame. And I always say no. Yep. Even when I know I'm gonna have time, I'll say no.
I suspect you might have filled out your, you know, programmed your emails to auto
no
me whenever you get these emails.
There's no programming, but in my mind, yeah. It's like, oh no, I'm not doing this. And then yesterday when I got the email, I was like, today I say yes.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good
I mean, why not? Why not? It's
today
fun.
I say yes. Tomorrow I say I regret saying yes.
No,
we're gonna have a good time. It's always a fun time on the Friday post game. Normally Steve O would be in this seat, but he is abroad in Italy, I believe, and I'm sure we're gonna get a full report on that when he comes back with lots and lots of graphics that I'm gonna have to produce at the last minute. But so we'll have to wait on that. Look forward to it. But in the meantime, behind us, do anybody have any idea what we're looking at behind us?
Well, there's a French flag.
Uh-huh.
There. There's some French words somewhere.
That's a clue, okay. So it's probably somewhere in like Martinique or Haiti.
Paris.
Paris, yes, it's Paris. Any idea why we're using this?
I have a guess.
We have a guess.
Is it because of the Olympic competition between Paris and Los Angeles?
Oh my God, no, it's not. That's a good guess though.
And that's not really a competition because both are gonna win.
Well, they both win, but they're both trying to get the 2024 Olympics. And I'm really hoping that LA loses and gets the later date because that'll give me some time
to prepare.
To get the hell out of here.
To plan a vacation.
To either plan a vacation or, more importantly, live closer to work so I don't have to deal with the clusterfuck traffic situation that's going to bring about.
Lemons into lemonade, Airbnb.
Yeah. Turn it into a vacay, make TYT pay for it.
I have friends who live in Austin and they make incredible amount of money for just the 2 or 3 weeks or whatever it is of South by Southwest renting out their place to get the. And
oh, that is a good point.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Now
money
all of a sudden,
schemes.
Make it 2024.
Yeah. That is alternative. No, the reason, as I'm sure some of you have guessed, we are recording this on Thursday the 13th, but the day it will air is Friday, July 14th, which is
Bastille Day.
Bastille Day. This is the Place de la Bastille in Paris, and commemorating the 1789 storming of the Bastille that launched the French Revolution. And so that's, I always try to be timely.
You know that the French Revolution really has its origins in the Americas. So a whole bunch of the French government invested huge amounts of money in, you know, what eventually became the Louisiana Purchase, and that all sank, and they ran out of money.
I don't believe that's right.
No, that is right. The timing. It's not the Louisiana Purchase. It's not about that territory.
Not the actual purchase itself.
That territory
exploring.
They invested a lot of money in the Americas, and it all went out. So they went into debt, and they had to call the Estates General together to
right. The same thing could be said about the American Revolution, that the British government spent a lot of money in the French Indian Wars and so on and so forth, and then wanted the colonists to pay for it. And
right.
Not so much.
Yeah.
So fascinating stuff on your Friday
postgame.
We're
already having fun.
Anyway, so that's the deal with the Friday postgame. We tape it a day early. So if anything particularly exciting happens with regard to, you know, maybe the Senate healthcare bill or anything, we don't know about it. I'm sorry. We're not going to talk about it. But we are going to talk about some other things, some other fun stuff, including any inside baseball. Do you have anything that we want to talk about in inside baseball? There was one thing I wanted to ask about, which is that TYT, as you may know, is expanding. We're going to be moving into space next door, you know, in the same building, but the next office space over that formerly was occupied by Spider-Man, right?
Yes.
Currently.
Like 8 Spider-Mans ago, right?
What was his name again?
Tobey Maguire.
Tobey Maguire. Yeah, no, it wasn't a joke. I mean, Tobey Maguire is out of like everyone on the planet, he's pretty low on the list of priorities in my life. Like, I never think about Tobey Maguire. So, yeah, I forgot his name.
All right.
But, yeah, that guy.
When we first moved here 3 years ago or something like that, we'd see him frequently, but yeah. I haven't seen him maybe.
He would sit outside
years.
And smoke a cigar.
Yeah. Yeah. In a gold spray painted chair. Didn't understand why it was gold spray painted, but that was what he was into. So
until Haas's dog Pitbull attacked him, and then I guess he didn't want to come out so much anymore. So
did that really happen?
Not really attacking. I think I may have mentioned this on a previous post game, but that Haas was sort of just walking Fish along, who was still a puppy, I think.
Yeah.
And he sort of jumped a little bit at Tony McGuire sitting there with any. And my response, if that were my dog, would be, "Oh, I'm so sorry. You know, he usually doesn't do that." Which, you know, people, dog owners lie about that. He never does this. He always does.
That's
that.
That's not true.
No, I'm just kidding. but the point being that Haas did not do that. He was like, "Calm down, Spidey." You know, didn't even say that, but like
that doesn't surprise me.
It's just a dog, you know. Ooh, you know, shouldn't your Spidey sense have tingled? So anyway, no more Tobey Maguire. But we're moving in. And I want to know if there's office politics and jockeying and people saying, "Ooh, I want to be over there," or "Can I be away from so-and-so because he smells," and all that sort of thing.
Some, but first let me say, we actually took the sublease from Spider-Man over a year ago.
What?
But we didn't, because we, maybe 2 years ago, something like that, because we thought we're on the verge of some big breakthrough and we're going to expand and we're going to need that space. And turns out, oops, we didn't need it. So we subleased it back to them and have been for a year or two. And they've been great. In that they let us do that, and that it worked out for us. We got lucky. We took a big gamble and lost it, but we got. How often in life do you gamble, lose, and you don't suffer for it?
Never.
We did. Yeah.
Right. Awesome. Even when I gamble and win, I don't really win. Yeah.
So we're still. So we have the place, and in September finally we're going to take it. There aren't office politics, but there are opinion. People are expressing. Whether they want to go. And some people are afraid. They don't want to be taken out and stuck into a little isolated
like
cubicle.
Yeah.
Where they're away from everybody.
Yeah. Are they cubicles in that?
In there, it's offices and some cubicles. It's definitely not an office, open, collaborative space
like this. So some people are going to get offices.
So I don't want to move. I like where I am. And I really like everyone around me, too. Like, I first of all, I like everyone in the company for the most part. Some people maybe not so much, but still, most people I like.
Considering there's like 80 people, it's not, you know, it's not that.
No. I like everyone here in LA a lot. I'll put it that way. I'm going to stop talking. Well, I consider you here in LA. You don't like, you know.
That's not important. The important point is you like the people who are around you, and you don't want to take a chance of moving.
Move.
And who knows what? Who knows who you're going to be next to?
Or nobody, which is worse.
You might be stuck next to Haas and his 18 interns.
Yeah. So So Haas used to sit next to me in the office, and he can be disruptive, right? He hasn't been disruptive in a long time, I feel like, but. When he was sitting next to me, there was a period of time when he would have one of his friends come in to collaborate with him on his Facebook videos.
Yeah.
And it drove me absolutely insane because his friend has, he doesn't understand the importance of personal space for someone like me, right? And so he would sit between me and Haas, and he was very like oblivious to the fact that he would take my chair or he would put like a bunch of his stuff on my desk, mm-hmm. and like he was loud.
Was loud.
And he would play his own music loud in the office. Like you're not an employee, dude. You don't work here. So like, what makes you think that you can take these liberties?
Millennials.
Anyway, so he. It's funny because stereotypical. Like he would fit that mold, right?
Yep.
Haas ended up moving to a different space. I love Haas. No issues with him whatsoever. But then all of a sudden, we hire all these interns for the summer. And he has like a fucking team of interns. Like he has 3 interns sitting around him at all times, and they're collaborating on his script for Facebook. And I'm just like, that's just weird to me.
It's very weird. I get in sometimes. I get in very early on Mondays, and Haas, who people like to make fun of, but he works hard when he has to.
Yeah.
And he's early in on Monday, and I'm sitting there all by myself at 7:30. Enjoying the peace and quiet, concentrating. And then at 7:45, Haas and his 3 effing interns walk in, and the whole place erupts in as loud as it is at midday. And they're trying their best to stick to that little desk area, 6 feet length that they have, but they can't help it. They're
crowded
over.
In there. Talk about crowding your space.
And they go on and on. And their purpose is to produce, Anna mentioned this, 1 video a day. And they have 4 people who spend 6 hours on it.
They don't spend that much.
It's kind of amazing. I feel like it's actually kind of productive.
You're partially responsible for that, aren't you?
Yes, I'm after
what's up with
that? Well, they're not taking 6 hours.
Yeah, they are.
Not to write it. That's including the editing.
Maybe.
they, you know, whatever. Haas usually has to shoot at 11:30 a.m. Maybe he'll push a little later to noon, but he's got to have a script done by then. And my job is to approve the idea in the first place, and then to go over the script and edit it, and you know, correct any mistakes or make any suggested changes. That Anna loves that process because she's done a couple of Facebook originals.
My favorite part about it was reading your feedback on my script. And like, I'm not the kind of person who sees notes on my writing and gets offended by it because I want to improve. So Malcolm's an excellent writer. I think I'm an okay writer, and I think I'm a good writer. Okay, I've always had a fun time writing.
Your scripts are always solid.
Really?
Yeah. Especially because like, you know, you don't have time. You got to bang this out. Where you got another full time job you're doing, and I'm also going to write a column for Raw Story or whatever. I mean, normally if I'm writing something, I take a long time and pore over it.
Well, I do too, though. Actually, yeah. What you don't know about, like the reason why I was having a tough time producing. My goal, and it was overly ambitious, was to produce 3 of these Facebook videos a week on top of my full time job with TYT. And then I realized it's impossible because I don't bang it out.
Yeah.
I spend forever researching and making sure that there's a lot of context and a lot of evidence for what I'm saying. I feel like oftentimes, look, if I did just takedown videos, I feel like it would be relatively easy. But no, I want to do more than that. I want to actually inform the people that are watching the video. And the frustrating thing is, my videos didn't do as well as I would have liked, and I feel like it's because I did go too far into the weeds of the issues I was covering, and it's frustrating.
Yeah, you would try to take a topic and examine it and explain your perspective instead of what really does well are those takedown videos.
Takedown videos do really well.
The really super hot topics and getting angry and saying that the other guy, they're the bad guys, they're wrong, they're evil. And that's, unfortunately, that's what succeeds on Facebook. It's not so much on YouTube, but they're different media. And so, but if you wanted to do that, you could, but your objective was to do something a little bit more thoughtful.
I think the reason why I got turned off by the whole notion of the takedown videos is while it helps you with your fan base and it helps you with views on that video, it goes usually will go viral if you do a good job with it, is because I feel like it doesn't really add anything of value to the conversation. It's just doing it specifically because you want to build an audience. And I care about building an audience, but I also have to like look at myself in the mirror every morning and not feel like shit. And I feel like I would feel really bad about myself if I'm like contributing to the divisiveness of what we're experiencing right now. Yeah. Anyway, and like, by the way, I'm not judging people who are doing those videos. It's what they want to do and it's helping their careers and it is what it is. But I just wish that there wasn't a market for it, that there wasn't such hunger for it.
Yeah, well, that's true. But there's also, there are certain videos that are just pure takedowns. You're wrong. I don't think we really do those necessarily.
Yeah.
And then you can do them in a more thoughtful fashion. And then you go to the other extreme where it's you're perfectly amiable and not criticizing the person personally.
Right,
But that wouldn't do as well as the one where you want to just really take them down. Yeah, it's a tough call, but I enjoy yours, and I thought they were pretty good. So anyway, so that's so we're moving. There's movement afoot. I just want to be able to keep my stapler, wherever that's important to me. But I don't actually have a dedicated desk here because I don't live here. I only come in every couple of weeks, and so I basically go on the office calendar and see who's out of town that week, and then I go sit in their chair. And I also have to field all their people's questions for that person, which is really difficult because I don't know anything about editing. But so that's happening. And who's responsible for allocating the space? Who gets to decide who gets an office?
We haven't had those conversations yet.
There's office space for on offer here, and I think there's. Yeah. Certain people are deserving, like parking spaces. Who gets the choice parking spaces?
Well, parking space will be important, but as we just explained with the office space, it's either the politics are simpler or more complicated because some people don't want an office space, and you don't want to assign one to someone who doesn't want it,
right?
And you don't want to leave someone who does want one out. So it's
also going to be a situation where someone who is maybe more disruptive to the office space would give them an office so that they're not they would get rewarded for being disruptive.
But then those kind of people, if you stick them in solitary confinement, they wither away and they lose who they are. So you can't do that.
I'm not sure that's
cruel.
Speaking of the Bastille, which was a prison, and that's why it was that's what it was being used for at the time of the French Revolution, if I can bring things back around, sort of, not really.
For no need.
anyway, so happy Bastille Day. I hope all of our French viewers are enjoying themselves. We're going to move on to the first fun segment we have, which is, of course, Weekly World News.
Weekly World news.
I like that.
Getting a sense of what you're what you're getting yourself into. This is a top-notch organization outfit we're running here. So the way Weekly World News works is, I'll tell Anna just for her benefit. Initially, I want to do more international stories because we don't cover enough international stories on the main show. And so I would look up various stories and I would send them to Steve and Dave and say, which one should we cover? This one, this one, this one. And inevitably, they wouldn't get back to me. And so I would have to decide myself. And so not only would I introduce the stories, but they wouldn't have even read them and know them. So I decided to take lemons, make lemonade, and turn it into a quiz and say, if they're not going to read them anyway, I'll make them guess which is the real story and which are the fake ones. So I call stories from around the globe that are not covered by the mainstream press or us necessarily, and I turn them into a quiz and five questions and multiple choice. Oh, Dave, you're not as cool as Obama. You didn't get it. There's a fly in here. We can monitor the progress of our attempts to get rid of that fly also as we progress. But first, let's get on to our first question. It's come to us from where? From Mexico, I believe. Where is Mexico anyway? Anybody know? There it is. There's little Mexico. So far from God, so close to the United States.
Yeah.
How do you say that in Spanish? Do you remember?
I don't want to do it right now.
Okay.
Because there's probably a specific way of saying
it. Probably
I know
is.
I could say it, but
just okay. But that is an expression, a Mexican expression. So far from God, so close to the United States. All right, the first question is this. The Mexican government was charged this week with spying on what group? Was it A, Chinese business leaders negotiating for rights to drill for oil in the Gulf of Mexico? B, international investigators looking into the 2014 murder of 43 Mexican students? C, journalists looking into allegations of government involvement in El Chapo's prison escape? Or D, Menudo?
And by the way, this is a fancy new graphic as well.
We used this last time, but it's relevant. So you get to choose A, B, C, or D.
All right,
and
I'm ready.
You put forward your guess. Do we have our guesses?
Yes.
We have one guess of B and another guess of B. So they're both confident about their answer. Are they right, though, Irma? That's the question. The answer
of course
is
they are. Anna's a news lady.
B, yes. International investigators looking into the 2014 murder of 43 Mexican students. All right, so.
I get so competitive with these like.
But the fact that you, okay, that shows me that you didn't know.
No, I knew, but I wasn't 100% sure.
Yeah.
There was another one that could have been it, but I forget which one it was. But then I was like, no.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got it.
There's some who are going to argue, perhaps, that I've dumbed down the quiz and made it a little easier because I have Anna here and I want to butter her up and want her to come back. But that is false. Those people are suggesting that are liars, and I don't want them as viewers anyway.
I don't want you to make it easy on me. Come on.
Okay, so investigators have revealed the targets of high-tech spying in Mexico included an international group of experts backed by the Organization of American States who had criticized the government's investigation into the disappearance of 43 students. You may remember this story. It was in 2014 where these 43 students in a rural part of Mexico, you probably remember the part, I don't remember where it was, but they disappeared and it turned out that they had been But they were on their way to Mexico City to participate in a protest. They were sidelined by government officials who turned them over to a crime syndicate, and then they disappeared. So they're presumed dead. And so now we're finding out that the investigators who were critical of the Mexican government's efforts to find out what really went on in this case, that they were their phones were infected with spyware. Mm-hmm. So I think I even have a graphic, a text graphic. A report released by the University of Toronto-based analysts found that someone sent emails with links to the spyware to the international group of independent experts named the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. The experts had been critical of the government's investigation of the 2014 disappearance of 43 students from a rural teachers' college in Guerrero State, a politically sensitive incident that deeply embarrassed the government. Which I know I'm just quoting from the article, but I find that. I'm sure it was embarrassing for the government, but it's also 43 people who were killed, and that seems more important to me. Mexico's president Enrique Peña Nieto last week
really
dismissed,
hot, by the way,
but he dismissed allegations that his government was responsible. I have another one. The spyware known as Pegasus is made by the Israel-based NSO group, which says it sells only to government agencies for use against criminals and terrorists. It turns a cell phone into an eavesdropper, giving snoopers the ability to remotely activate its microphone and camera and access its data, which is pretty terrifying that is potentially out there. And well, but you know, Israel's only selling it to governments, so
for good
years. So it's all right.
Of course, it's we're from the government, we're here to help you. Can you borrow your phone? But I guess they would send emails with attachments that seem really intriguing. And it's not just in these the Mexican or these investigators. It's been this particular spyware has been used in this Pegasus has been used elsewhere. This happened in 2016 in March, and there's more about the particular case with the students, but it's pretty grisly and brutal.
Yeah.
And there's no proof right now that the Mexican government was involved in the spyware attack on these international investigators, but it's just super disappointing. Like, oh yeah, you're going to come in and investigate? Well, you know, you're going to pay the price, and we're going to follow you. So, I mean, they would be able to monitor their emails, their texts, and their phones, and where they were, and all this stuff.
I want to just quickly talk about these phishing emails and, you know, phishing messages that seem to work really well and obviously compromise the cybersecurity of big organizations and things. I am terrified that someone in this company is going to open a phishing email. And it's going to happen. It's going to happen. I just know for a fact it's going to happen. Someone's going to be like, oh, here is what appears to be a salacious story about nonsense. Let me click on this link from a sender that I don't recognize.
Yeah.
And it's going to destroy all of our lives, right? And so that's really the only comment I have on it. I just want to, like sit everyone down and tell them, just don't click on any link that's emailed to you or texted to you. That's happened to me before. There was this one super sophisticated attempt to hack into my Google account. Someone who had access to my cell phone number. So this person tried to break into my Google email account, okay, my Gmail. And when that happens, they ask you for an access code, right? And so this individual who also had my phone number texts me pretending as if they're Google, saying, we just texted you your access code in a different text. Please text it here to verify that you are the individual who signed into your Google account, whatever, right? And I looked at it and I was like, and then it said, if you fail to do so, your Google account will be shut down within 24 hours, right?
Yeah.
And at first I was like, oh damn, that sounds serious. And then I thought about it and I'm like, no, this person's trying to hack into my account. They just want my access code. So I just wrote back, you can't hack a bitch like me, fuck you. and then that was it.
That made their day.
Yeah, but don't fall for that shit. Just take a second to think about it before you click on that link or before you respond to that text.
Well, you know who's, it's not gonna be responsible for this, for you know a phishing effort getting infecting us all, is J.R. Jackson. Mm-hmm. Because as far as I can tell, he does not open his emails.
Probably for this reason. He's the most paranoid guy in the company.
He is, yeah.
He did actually respond for the first time ever. He responded to my email asking, but Anna had already said she would do it, so maybe it's a little fishy. But he's notorious with me anyway for not responding to emails. So all right, let's move on to.
Well, no, I want to say one thing. Of course, it's infuriating that a government would spy against people who are investigating a crime.
Yeah.
But it's doubly infuriating to me because Mexico ranks so poorly in every measure of health and society and well-being, and they spent $40 million or however many to buy this stupid spyware.
Yeah.
What's their legitimate need for it? Never mind their illegitimate.
Yeah.
Need. What is the government doing buying?
Well,
this?
I mean, presumably, Mexico. You may have heard has a problem with drug cartels. So
this isn't going to help with the. You know how you help with the drugs. You got to cut the demand.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, but that's not in their. That's not really in their power to do because we're the ones supplying.
I know.
Wait a minute. That's not
think
how supply
about,
and demand works.
I
went to the Rick Perry School of Economics. That's not how supply and demand works.
Think about how much money they could make if they just and how they would get rid of their cartel problem if they just legalized and regulated these drugs. They would cut back on addiction for serious illicit drugs, right? Obviously, cartels would lose their power because if you can buy the drugs from the government or a legal source, why would you go to the cartels? Like, it's just, and you can tax it, and you'd make money instead of spending $40 million on this piece of shit technology that's super creepy.
But it's true, that lesson has to be taught to the US, not to Mexico.
No,
the great thing is we have our own drug cartels here in the United States called pharmaceutical companies, and they have the same problems, and we have the same solutions
but
here.
But don't worry, Joe Manchin's on that.
Dave's referencing Cenk's interview earlier this week with Joe Manchin and how he's his daughter is the CEO of a major pharmaceutical company, so maybe he's not going to come down too hard.
No, but he said that he was. That's where his focus is.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. But he was full of shit. So, but anyway, all right. Let's move on. We got lots to get to. We got our next story comes to us from Brazil. What could this story be, Dave? There's Brazil.
Oh, I like that map.
Yeah, Brazil did not have the same map.
Usually we have to guess, oh, and what's that country to the left of the, to the now
left.
We know.
To the left, I like that. Anyway, so what is the question? It is, what is the recent big news involving Brazil's former president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva? Is it A, he was sentenced to prison for corruption? B, he announced that he is running to retake the presidency? C, he testified against his successor, Dilma Rousseff? Or D, Guinness denied his request to be credited as the first person to get a so-called Brazilian wax? Now I would miss doing this just because we wouldn't get the music. I think we both have answers. Dave knows his answer and Anna has hers. What do we have? What are our answers? We have an answer A and answer C. What is the correct answer?
Wait.
Oh, yeah, that's the right one.
The correct answer is A. Oh, so he was sentenced to prison for corruption. Yeah, but the... So what's the story with Lula? He was once the most popular politician in the world, according to Barack Obama. But he has been sentenced to 9 years and 6 months in prison after being found guilty on corruption and money laundering charges. Bear in mind that pretty much everybody involved in any level of government in all of Brazil is accused of or under suspicion or been arrested or charged with corruption. So
that's why I thought Rousseff was, you know, because people hate her, right?
Well, who?
I don't follow the story closely enough, obviously.
Well, she was his handpicked successor. He was the most popular politician. He stepped down after two terms, and then she had two terms, and she was brought down by this corruption probe. But now the people who replaced her, her vice president, I think I've forgotten his name, he is now holding on to power very tenuously because he himself is under examination. We've talked about this in the Friday Post game before. So anyway, Lula says that it's just he's being attacked for, you know, it's just politics. We have a graphic here. Lula won two mandates as Brazil's first president from the leftist Workers' Party and helped his handpicked successor Dilma Rousseff win two subsequent elections before she was impeached last year for breaking budget rules amid a sprawling corruption scandal at state-run oil company Petrobras. So the accusations against Lula involve billions of dollars paid to middlemen, executives, and politicians for fat contracts, and that there are more trials coming. He ostensibly got an expensive apartment by some contractors, and then they got government. It's all, you know, it's complicated stuff. But they're, and he's denying it. He's denying he even owned that apartment, which I find amusing. It seems like that should be, you should be able to establish that. During his trial in May, Lula gave 5 hours of testimony, which he angrily proclaimed his innocence and denied ever owning the apartment in question. But he left office with an 87% approval rating, and he was leading in polling if he wanted to come back, but what his supporters are alleging is that this is politically motivated, and if they convict him and his appeals don't work, then he cannot ever run for president again. And so they're just looking to bring him down. But right now, Michel Temer, the current president, is facing corruption charges that could see him tried by Brazil's Supreme Court if 2/3 of Brazil's lower house agree in a vote expected in the coming days. So that's what's going on in Brazil. Dave had a
sorry.
I'll do better. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Anna. I'll speed it up. Jesus Christ.
That flies.
Don't we have that tennis racket thing? The electrical tennis racket?
We need to have a fly swatter.
Is there an electric tennis racket in one of those in here? Yeah. Well, come on. Somebody get on this.
Someone can just go to Target and get the electric tennis.
Yeah, quick, before this is over. So Dave had a leg up on this because he was reading New York Times and it was right on the front page. He said, maybe we should talk about this. And I said, well, hold off.
But by the way, B, which was Lula's running for president, is also true. He intends or has been intended to run.
Well, that's why he's leading the polls. But he has not announced his intention to run, as far as I know, although he is leading in the polls. It's sort of like Bernie right now, although Bernie, I don't think, has been sentenced to 10 years in prison. But Lula was extraordinarily popular. The question is, you know, you said, isn't she really unpopular? Does anybody hate her? And I think she and Lula are in the same situation where they had a tremendous amount of popularity, but it has waned because of all. But if you're one of their supporters, you're saying this is politically motivated and it's succeeding. Somebody was quoted in the article, some Brazilian was saying, look, if you want to go after a Brazilian politician for corruption, you're going to get it. You can get anybody. So it's like, you know, speeding. So that's the situation in Brazil. We'll be watching that closely. You got more to say about Lula?
I'm always hesitant to speak about any other country because you don't really know unless you study it and live there. But from what I know, he was a good president. His 87% approval was justified.
Yeah, I mean, he unquestionably, you know, he brought tens of millions of Brazilians like out of poverty, his policies. And he was very popular for good reason. And you can also see why, if what his supporters are alleging is true, that they or that he they were out to get him and they got him, that it was politically motivated, you can see why, because he was popular. So
right. So, unfortunate situation.
All right, so our next question comes to us from Switzerland in Central Europe. There it is, little Switzerland. And the question is this. Swiss banks recently announced that for the first time they will soon begin doing what? Is it A, working with Nobel Peace Prize winner Muhammad Yunus to support microlending services in the developing world? B, sharing information with authorities about secret numbered account holders convicted of human trafficking? C, managing assets based in Bitcoin and other digital currencies? Or D, giving away a DVD copy of Heidi to anyone opening a new account? I'm guessing Anna has never heard of Heidi.
No.
I've heard of it, but I actually would confess I don't really know what it is.
It's a Swiss book and movie that takes place in Switzerland.
Is it the Swiss equivalent of Sound of Music or something?
No, it's about a little girl. I don't remember the details of the story, but it's a little girl who lives in the mountains and there are no Nazis as far as I know. All right, do we have answers?
Yes.
Bring up
so
the,
what
are,
the
we have
a,
we have two people both saying B. What is the what are the what is it, Irma? What is the correct answer? The correct answer is C, managing assets based in Bitcoin and other digital currencies.
B was too obvious.
B was what I wished they would do.
Yeah.
And I should have known. I mean, the whole thing about Swiss banks is
pretty shady.
If they did B, then they would have no reason to exist. Yeah, B is a bad answer. I'm changing.
Well, no, because
you can't change it.
I like that. We're gonna edit all this out. We'll go back and have Dave get all the correct answers. Okay, so it's Falcon Private Bank. Let's see, where's Switzerland? What does Switzerland look like, Irma? There it is. That's a beautiful image. I didn't have a lot of graphics that really went along with the stories per se.
Are you sure that's Switzerland?
I'm not sure.
I searched for that was Germany.
I searched for Switzerland, images, and this one came up. So
maybe.
I didn't go there personally.
That is
so. The Falcon Private Bank received approval from a Swiss regulator to offer Bitcoin products, and it's the first Swiss regulator to do it. But other global regulators may approve Bitcoin products, they may follow the Swiss bank's lead in this to manage assets based on the blockchain technology behind Bitcoin and other digital currencies. We have one text graphic for you. People here are thinking this is beyond Bitcoin. This is a new chapter in how we exchange money. As a financial services partner, I think we have to become part of that strategy. And that's Arthur Beloyan, global head of products and services at Falcon Bank. So this is this is the beginning, or maybe this will be an inflection point in the growth of blockchain technology and Bitcoin becoming much more acceptable, which I'm all for because I bought some of it, a couple of years ago. And anything that makes it more valuable, I'm definitely in support of. Geez, the fly landed on your head. Get out of here, you. But Switzerland is obviously known for being a leader in banking and practices.
Why would they be a leader in banking? That's weird.
Well, it's not just that I know they get a bad rap for the numbered accounts that are hidden and they hide drug money and all that stuff, but they also did help the Nazis hide their money.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Let's paint with a very broad brush. The country is also one of the friendliest to digital currency enthusiasts. Its Zug region has already been dubbed Crypto Valley for the number of digital currency businesses located there. And we have, this is interesting, Falcon has installed a Bitcoin ATM in its Zurich headquarters lobby. So you can go to a Bitcoin ATM. I have no idea how that would work. I even own Bitcoin and I don't know how it would work. But the Bitcoins are coming, whether you'll want them to or not, and maybe they will bring down the international monetary system, and maybe they will be better than that and more useful. You got any thoughts on Bitcoin, Dave?
Questions. I've never quite been able to understand Bitcoin. I know Mike Sheckles, who I saw in there, has explained it to me, and I've tried to read about it, and it's not sinking in. But if a bank, are they just doing that, providing access to your Bitcoin by sticking an ATM on the wall, or are they changing this way? Are they buying into the cryptocurrency as an alternative?
Presumably, they think that they can make money by accepting Bitcoin as an alternative currency, and maybe they're just treating it like any other currency.
Or they're treating it like a store. You want to buy some cigarettes? Well, you can pay in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
If that's all they're doing, not that big a deal.
Right. Well, it's not so much store, but like you can convert your Bitcoin to Swiss francs or whatever they, you know, euros or whatever they use there. I don't know. I don't. You know, I read the story. I'm like, I don't even know what that means. It's going to be Bitcoin-based asset management. I have no
idea. Okay, well,
yeah.
That's my point. I don't quite.
How does that work? I don't know. But the international financial system is also, you know, to me anyway. So adding Bitcoin to it isn't going to add to my confusion. All right. So let's move on to where are we going next? Why none other than China? China. This is not black China, this is red China. And what is the question coming to us from China? It is...
Did you just make a black China reference?
Anyway, I did. I'm hip. I'm,
it hit me kind of late.
I know what the kids are up to. A Chinese umbrella rental startup recently suffered a setback after what happened?
Oh, I know the story.
You know the story?
I know the story.
Oh, Anna thinks she knows. A, users failed to return hundreds of thousands of rented umbrellas. B, Langzhou, the first city targeted for the service, was struck by a prolonged drought. C, flooding caused by heavy rainfall severely damaged the company's manufacturing facility. Or D, the so-called umbrellas proved to be just surplus plastic bags left over from the 2008 Beijing Olympics. Steve always gives me a hard time. Says, how much time did you waste coming up with all this stuff? So, because I have to make up three answers to make them seem plausible. All right, do we have our answers?
I don't know, man. I don't want to get it wrong.
Dave says A. Anna says
A. That was an excellent guess. Ooh, what is the correct one?
What is the correct answer?
Good.
A. Users failed to return hundreds of thousands of rented umbrellas.
They stole the umbrellas. Like, I love the way that you framed it. They just straight up stole the umbrellas.
I don't know. Is it stealing if you rent something and don't give it back? Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah. So how did you know about the story? How did you?
It was a potential second hour story. I believe John Iadarola was the one who pitched it, and it was amusing. Like, China's an interesting place. Asian countries are interesting because they have all of these ideas that would never even be thought up in the US, like an umbrella sharing service.
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be based on like the bike sharing services.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's like.
Just buy a $5 umbrella or whatever, however that would, you know, be translated into their currency and just move on with your life. It's not like the most expensive thing in the world. Like the bike thing I get, bikes are freaking expensive. I should know, I have a husband who just purchased a bike that I'm not happy about, but it is what it is, so.
Married life, huh?
I know.
So
we can do us.
But yeah, but there's a basis for this, because who hasn't, you know, taken an umbrella out when they think it's gonna rain, it doesn't rain, then you get lugging this umbrella around, or it's raining, you bring your umbrella with you, it stops raining, and now you've got your umbrella all day. You know, in terms of hassles in life, this is not, you know, huge. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the startup company is called Sharing E-Umbrella, and they would rent umbrellas in 30-minute blocks, but they lost all 300,000 umbrellas they owned in just 3 months. The way it worked is you would deposit the equivalent of 2.2 pounds. I got this from The Guardian, so it's in pounds per umbrella, and charge about 6 pence for every half hour of use, deducted from a minimum top up of 1 pound. And they were GPS enabled. And that's why they cost
more.
Go
get them, then.
They were one at a time, yeah. So they cost 6.85 pounds each. I don't know what that is in American money, so I'm sorry.
Yeah. Here's what I have no interest in. Any company or even government organization saying, here, take our GPS tracked product, and then you don't have to buy your own. You can just lug this around. We can keep track of you. No. This was a terrible idea.
Well, unfortunately, Anna, they are undeterred. Do we have a graphic for this one? There's a bunch of Chinese people with umbrellas. See, you know, it doesn't really, you know, it's not specific to the story. These are not all rented umbrellas or anything like that. Do we have a text graphic with this, Irma? Okay. So in theory, users would scan a code with their smartphone and receive a code to unlock a combination lock built into the handle. There was no penalty for an unreturned brolly. How you know it's from England? A factor that could explain the high incidence of missing umbrellas. That's the key quote. That's why I wanted to do this story. That one. That's old. Yeah.
Okay.
That's old one.
Like you have. I want everyone to understand this, and I'm saying it specifically for TYT. There has to be consequences for bad behavior. There just has to be, right? Because if there are no consequences, then the bad behavior will continue. People are bad. Humans are terrible, right?
Well, this is like the financial regulations. Often, when they write these financial regulations, and they say, "Well, you can't do X, you can't do this," and it's like, "Okay, well, what if they do it?" It's like, "Oh, hmm." You know, so if there's no, or even if you say, "Well, they're subject to X penalties, but if you don't enforce those laws, mm-hmm. so laws that are not enforced are laws that don't exist, essentially.
Right, exactly.
And
yes.
and you can't. And when you have children, if you have rules in your household,
yeah.
not saying you were going to have children, but even for Charlie, mm-hmm. If you have rules for him, Charlie, you always have to wear a leash in the lobby.
Yeah.
and then you let your child or your dog do things that are break the rules and don't have any consequences for
yeah.
them. Then that's not really a rule.
Yeah, yeah. When I first adopted Charlie, I was told that the best way to train him is to only use positive reinforcement. Don't ever scold him. Don't do any negative.
He's very sensitive.
He is sensitive, though. He's such a sweet dog.
He's
okay, but anyway,
heart.
I get all emotional when I start talking about Charlie. But you know what happened? It didn't work. It didn't work. And finally, when I started punishing him for doing things that he shouldn't be doing, he stopped doing those things.
Wow.
Like, there needs to be consequences. I like consequences.
Now, which is not to say that the honor system can't ever work, and but there still have to be consequences for people who fail to live up to the honor system, and then you get kicked yeah. out of the group or whatever it is. But so despite what Anna suggests about this being a dumb idea and that they have their heads up their collective umbrellas, the company founder still plans to roll out 30 million umbrellas across China by the end of the year, according to local media.
Really? Is that like the big problem in China? Like the access to umbrellas, it's just not there. We need to do something about it right away. There are other societal issues in China that I'm sure they could tackle.
Don't go away. Didn't you say that you have to leave a deposit for the umbrella? That's the penalty if you steal it. You
well,
lose your deposit.
Yeah, but I think, let's see, what did it say? It said that, I don't know, what did it say? There was, I don't know.
You read it.
I guess, yeah, I read it, but I think that the deposit was
too small.
Was less than the cost of the umbrella
right.
or something. It was insignificant enough that it's not worth the time and trouble to go return the umbrella. That you get the money you get back. I would guess. I don't know. It was a relatively short story. We can ask John Iderola when we talk to him later. If he ever comes. He's also one of the people who gets invited on who has never joined us on the Friday post game. Even though it's so much fun. Come on.
I like how you guys throw people under the bus
sure.
during this post. Now I kind of want to do it every time just to make sure you guys aren't shit talking me.
Well, the proud 19 of the 19 viewers we have. And we're constantly with Dave here, frequently it's about taking Cenk down
yeah.
a peg. But the great thing is Cenk has never been on or watched, I don't think, a Friday post.
No, Cenk doesn't have time to
yeah.
watch.
He has no idea. So
yeah.
he doesn't
have time
network.
To be in our production meetings. Anyway,
but if we told him that we badmouthed him, he might find time
no.
to tune in. All right, last question comes to us from where? Oh, Canada. So you may have heard this story too. I think a lot of the stories I picked this week were more prominent than they are typically.
Yeah, prominent countries.
So what's the question, Irma? A Canadian wedding was recently interrupted when what happened to the father of the bride? Was it A, he was attacked by a moose, B, he was struck by lightning, C, he was hit in the head by a stray golf ball, or D, he was sent to the penalty box for high sticking?
What is high sticking?
That's a hockey reference.
Oh.
High stick, you have a stick and you swing it around somebody's head that you can get a penalty for. Michael Shore, that's for you, Michael. Who's the only person less likely to watch the Friday post game than Cenk is Michael Shore.
Yeah. Ah, you can't. I was still thinking about it.
Don't.
He doesn't know the answer necessarily.
Okay, can we put up the
bring back the
question. Possible answers again?
Don't be swayed.
Occasionally, Irma will reveal the answer before.
But if you do, if you.
Okay, I'm just gonna go with A.
Try the tie. You have to have a different answer.
So you're one behind, Dave. Dave, what do you? You got 3 out of 4, right?
I think.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
One ahead.
No.
Maybe two. Whatever.
Yeah. All right. So we have an answer of A and an answer of B. What is the correct answer, Irma? It's B. He was struck by lightning. Getting 2 right is better than Steve-O. Steve-O usually he averages 0.
Really?
That's an average. Sometimes he gets worse than 0. No, he's notoriously terrible at this game.
Oh, wow.
Okay, it's a guy named JP Nadeau. His daughter was getting married in Woodstock, New Brunswick this past Saturday. And in the middle of his speech, he was addressing the groom, he said, and we have a text block for this, I think, Irma. No? He said, Adam, you are some lucky guy, he told the Canadian Broadcasting Company, or corporation, there it is. As soon as I said that, my daughter's eyes, she was looking at me, just popped right out, because all of a sudden there was this lightning flash that hit right behind me. Nadeau looked down just in time to see his right hand light up.
Damn.
It was like I was holding a lightning bolt in my hand. It was amazing, he said. I'm sure I jumped because I felt a major shock. But after that, I was kind of okay, and I even continued speaking. So he proceeded. He gets struck by lightning. He's got lightning in his hand. He's like, I don't need you right now. And I got
a
speech
to make. Is he like a superhero or something? That's
maybe.
Amazing. Wow.
Or, you know, maybe he was wearing rubber-soled shoes, luckily. Everyone else apparently said that they thought that he was going to drop dead, but he hasn't even visited a doctor, although the event did leave a scorch mark on his thumb where the electricity had likely entered his body. But now he's saying that the jolt might have actually improved his health because his knee has been working better lately. So
nice.
That's how we play weekly world news. And you have any comments on this or thoughts on this?
Why doesn't he go to the doctor? Isn't it free in Canada?
That's the interesting thing. Like, if going to the doctor was free, would you just be going every week?
Well,
like,
it's the flip side of the conversation we just had, and the Republicans are 0.01% right about that. If you make Medicare care free or too inexpensive, too many people would go to unnecessary procedures and all that stuff.
Well, obviously they wouldn't. guy got struck by lightning.
Well, this is an honorable gentleman.
Yeah.
No, it's not honorable.
He's not going to the doctor because he doesn't feel the need to.
It's a nonsense argument.
Yeah, I think it's a nonsense argument as well. Because, look, I have health insurance, right? And it's, you know, pretty affordable for me to go see my doctor. But I've had a cough, like an unbearable, uncontrollable, relentless cough for 3 weeks now. And Christian's like, why aren't you going to the doctor? I'm like, I don't want to. Right? And so the reason why I'm saying that is because people are fucking busy. Everyone is stretched so thin. We're not going to be like, oh, I have free health insurance. I'm just going to fucking show up to the doctor every week for nonsense.
It's not like getting a free membership to the
gym. Not everyone's, believe it or not, as busy as us here. There are people who have a lot of time on their hands.
Yeah, but those people, if they want to go to the, if they're hypochondriacs, they're going to go anyway. But
yeah, like my friend Lauren will go every week. I have no doubt. Like, she'll see like a little tiny red bump on her hand, and she'll be like, "Oh my God, what is that, Anna? Do you know what that is? I'm going to go see the doctor." She's a hypochondriac.
But it's not like going to the doctor comes to your house and it's so convenient. Going to the doctor is a pain in the ass, even in Canada. So. And they're also, guess what? If it's a little red dot on your hand when they talk about how they ration care, you're not gonna be seen immediately. Hold everything, you know. Yeah. The guy with the knife sticking out of his chest. 15 minutes, sir. We got to get Lauren in here with the red dot.
I'm more pissed off by the $16 it cost you to park at the doctor than the $40 copay.
Yes. Dave always gets it. Yes.
If it's about parking. Anna's got a problem with it.
I get real passionate about, oh God, if I was leader of the world, like paying for parking would be outlawed. You can't charge people for parking. Oh, you have private property. You have private property in the form of land that you want to use as a parking lot. Fuck you, no. Go ahead and build a building there, but I'm not going to let you charge people to park their goddamn cars. Anyway. Especially the city, right? Like the balls on these people.
The city's where you need it.
No. Let's just talk about the city for a second, okay?
We might be here a while.
My taxpayer money goes toward maintaining these streets, and then I get double taxed by having to fucking pay to park my car, right? And it becomes more and more exorbitant every year. Like $2, $3 an hour for parking at a meter. No, unacceptable. I'm already paying my taxes. Don't double tax me. Anyway, I sounded like a Republican.
Well, but the whole point of that is to pretend like you, as a politician, if you raise taxes, you get in big trouble. You know that your opponents use that against you.
Yeah.
But if you raise, it's like the people.
It's
in
a
Ferguson.
Regressive tax.
The people
exactly.
in Ferguson, they're all, you know, every resident is getting screwed. You know, eight ways from Sunday with various fines and so on and so forth. That's the way they can raise their revenue and not be accused of raising taxes.
Yeah. So the wealthy should pay their fair share, so these regressive taxes stop.
Yeah.
No more.
Oh my God! Have you heard? I don't know if you you know Malcolm Gladwell.
Yes.
He does a podcast, and there's a recent episode of his podcast where he talks about Los Angeles and the golf courses, the country clubs in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. How through Prop 13 and various other means that they have negotiated and wheedled the tax system, they don't pay. They're the only, besides Griffith Park, they're the only green spaces in LA, and they're exclusive. You have to pay $250,000 a year or whatever just to get in. And so the vast majority of Angelenos can't visit them. They run around them because there are paths around some of them, and you know, for just when they go jogging. But they pay, like, you know, if they were to pay the same rates for their property as property owners do, it would be in the billions of dollars. But they only pay like a couple hundred thousand dollars a year in taxes. And but guess who gets to make up that all those. It's a fascinating podcast, and I have my issues with Malcolm Gladwell, but this particular podcast about Los Angeles and golf.
I gotta check that out.
It's super interesting,
amazing.
You're gonna be infuriated.
Yeah, well, I read an article in LA Weekly just last night about how in order to rent a two bedroom, two bath apartment in Los Angeles right now, you have to be making at least $106,000 a year. Right, to comfortably afford it, where you don't feel strapped for cash constantly. Yeah. That's insane. And by the way, this whole notion about how, you know, like financial advisors will always tell you, or write columns giving people advice about their finances, they'll always be like, oh, never spend more than 30% of your gross income. Your gross income. That's before taxes, right? Never spend more than 30% of your gross income on housing. Who has ever I'm sure their housing was affordable at some point when there was like five people here. But like, really? I mean, do you guys spend only 30% on housing or less?
No, I'm sure it's, of course.
No, of course, it's outrageous. But that's ridiculous advice. It's sort of like all the advice to millennials about how they need to start saving for their retirement now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, $700,000 of student loan debt. But yeah, I need to start putting a nickel away every week for my retirement. Yeah, it's unrealistic. And who are all the people who can afford to live in Los Angeles?
That's what I want to know.
There's millions of people in this city.
I have like this temptation to go to like the Griffith Park area, Los Feliz, because like they had the most beautiful homes there. I love that area. I just want to knock on the doors
and just be like,
what do you do? Just tell me what you do. I want to do it too, right? I don't care what it is, just like tell me.
Well, first thing I do is I install a security system to keep people like you away from out of my own, from knocking on my door.
And I build a wall.
Yeah, they're going to build a wall. So. I like how this a story about a Canadian father of a bride getting struck by lightning winds up as a discussion
you never
of
know.
You
know,
affordable housing
in Los Angeles. Yeah. All right, so let's move on. We only have a few minutes, but I want to get to Weekly World. To Totally True or Totally Bullshit, because Anna's never played, and we'd hate to send her away without getting a chance to at least weigh in. So let's. I believe we have an opening for this one too, Irma, don't we? Not bad, huh?
Very good.
Steve and I agree that it's the best thing that maybe that TYT has ever produced. Care of our friend Tim Collins over there, who's the producer of the postgame show, sort of. And so the way Totally True or Totally Bullshit works, in case you haven't seen it before, is I will put forward a proposition, a positive proposition, as you used to say in debate, right?
Uh-huh.
And then we will discuss individually whether that proposition is A, totally true, or B, totally bullshit. And the important thing to remember, right, Dave, is that we don't do nuance.
Okay.
Unless we do. So, but that's our little tribute to W.
We gotta go fast.
Yes. All right.
We gotta prep for the show.
Okay. Oh, the show will take care of itself.
This is a show.
You did great, Anna.
Thank you.
I watched it already. You did great. Both yesterday and today. You on tomorrow? Are you on Fridays?
Yes.
You did a great job. Good. I didn't think I missed you. Okay. So the first one is about. Is very timely. And it's this: Mitch McConnell will succeed in passing the Senate health care bill. Totally true or totally bullshit? So that's the question. Is the Senate going to pass a health care bill? I ask you, Dave. He's going to pass one. Totally true or totally bullshit?
Saying totally true. I was saying that a few weeks ago because that's what Republicans do. They line up and they pass their crappy agenda. So it's true.
Okay, Anna, what are you saying?
I'm going to say totally false because there's too much political capital at stake.
It's not totally true, totally false. It's
total bullshit.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, no nuance. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I don't think that they're going to succeed.
You think they're going to fail? I'm going to say totally true because it's not just that they all line up. It's also there's this pattern where there's a lot of news about not only that there are certain legislatures are wobbling, or I'm a no, or I'm not going to do it, and then so there's I think it actually discourages opponents because they hear, oh no, Susan Collins isn't going to vote for it. Oh, this guy's not, you know, the Dean Heller's not going to vote for it. Okay, we got this. It's okay, you know. And then all of a sudden, it's like, because that's exactly what happened with the House version, where they actually didn't get it, and then I think there was this collective sigh of relief. And then all of a sudden, whoa! Mm-hmm. Suddenly they passed it.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying that's going to happen, where they're going to not pass it, pull it, and try to pass it again later. But
That's what they did. Take the vote, but they knew they would fail, so they pulled it. This is a different bill.
Mm-hmm. Right. But last time, like Trump said, I want a vote, and so they got and then he hasn't said that with the Senate bill. He did say that with the House bill, and I guess Ryan had to tell him we can't have a vote because we're not going to, we don't have the votes. So, but I suspect that the same sort of pattern, and I feel like a lot of the media plays into it.
What happened to no nuance?
Do you miss the part where I said, then we actually do nuance? So I'm just explaining my reasoning. All right, so that's it. So then let's, what's the next one? So this one requires a little more nuance. If the GOP does pass a healthcare bill, even Trump's base will begin to abandon him once people start losing their health insurance. So the question is, this is if the
totally bullshit.
This is if the Senate, not only the Senate passes, but they get it signed and a new law, Anna says totally bullshit. Trump's base will not abandon him if they start losing their insurance.
Trump can pick the front lawn of a new supporter every day and take a gigantic shit on it and leave it there. Mm-hmm. And that supporter will still get down on his knees and fillet him. Like that's, they fucking love him and it doesn't make any sense because he's fucking them.
All right, Dave, what do you think? Is well, lose your base if they start losing
their health insurance? No, partially because of what Anna said, but also partially because I think the timing of, and now I'm being technical, just worse than being nuanced. I think the people losing their insurance will come in a few years.
I don't right. know what you're saying. Sorry.
It's okay.
They're trying to get
they're
my
probably
attention.
Trying to tell you to wrap up.
No, I'm good.
Oh, to have
some water. You so, can mind if you want. I didn't drink any of it.
The ill effects of the bill won't be felt for a few years. Right. I don't know the details, but maybe it'll be even after 2020.
But there is this perception, isn't there, among Democrats, like, oh, if they pass this bill, they're screwed. You know, the Democrats are all doing the na-na-na.
They even did the na-na-na.
That's right, because you mentioned that in a previous post game a couple weeks ago. That's right. I agree with you. I don't even remember what Trump's base will begin to abandon him. Totally bullshit. They won't. And I think you're right. I like you clarified that he can take a dump on their front lawn and leave it there. So if he cleans it up,
yeah,
definitely not. But he can even leave it there, and they will still fillet him, which coincidentally, or it makes sense because he already has his pants down.
But I do want to say one thing that's tangentially related. I don't know if you saw Anna reads the newspaper religiously. That either the PolitiFact or the Washington Post did a analysis of Mitch McConnell's statement saying that this bill doesn't kick anyone off Medicaid.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's totally bullshit. But what Mitch McConnell was going at is those people who are going to lose their Medicaid are not going to lose it for several years. So the people on it now, and there's natural turnover. So the people on it now won't be kicked off. It's just that you won't be able to get it in 4 years. So that's his little grain of truth. And that's what I'm saying. I don't know the details, but the people who start losing their health insurance might be in a few years. By then, Trump, if he runs again, might retain their support.
Well, and that's what Trump is saying. You know, in the campaign trail, he said, "I'm not going to cut Medicare or Medicaid." And the way I guess they're going to make the argument that he was true to his word is that there's not going to be a cut in the actual number of dollars spent, but it's not going to increase with the increased population of people who need it. Mm. So it will be an effective cut, but you can say, "Oh, no, there's actually more money."
Political,
yeah, that's political bullshit. Yeah. But I'm with you. I think at this point, what could he possibly do? And maybe he is. I mean, there's always, you got these stories in Salon or on various sort of left outlets saying, or MSNBC goes out to try to interview Trump supporters. Like, what are you thinking that you're still supporting him? And it's weird because they didn't do that about Obama or anybody else. Like, when Obama was very relatively unpopular, he wasn't losing any of his base of support either.
Yeah, but Obama wasn't a lunatic. And I'm not just saying that because, I'm a left-leaning person. I had huge problems with Obama and we criticized him on the show regularly, right? But he wasn't a lunatic. I was just talking to John Iadarola about this. I'm just going through this like extremely severely discouraged phase where I'm having a hard time finding or remembering the importance of what we do because we just keep hearing from these lunatics, right? And I feel like things have devolved so much and it's like, why are we wasting our time? I mean, if you can literally sit here and provide evidence for all the different ways that Trump is screwing over his base, they still don't care, right? And so what's the point? What are we doing? Why are we wasting our time? And so look, there is value and there is a huge chunk of this country that did not vote for him. Millions more voted for the Democratic candidate. So, there is a hunger out there for truth telling and informing people. But at the same time, like his base is the most frustrating thing in the world because they have bought into the propaganda so much that it doesn't matter how much these politicians are screwing them over, they will just give them the undivided support because they think, you know, everything that's wrong in their lives is due to things like political correctness and black people. And it's just ignorance, man. It's
but
ignorance.
Even so, wouldn't you think that if he was elected president and the Republicans control both houses and they have the Supreme Court essentially, that he would do things to advance their interest to, you know, put black people back in their place and end political correctness and all that sort of thing? That's not happening though. So yeah. Wouldn't they be able to see that? Even if those are their bullshit, you know, points or the issues they care about, that he's not doing anything, you would think. But I mean, realistically, I try to view it from their perspective. I think it is similar to the way Obama's hardcore base, you know, looked at Obama, because if you were an Obama appointment or opponent, yeah, and hated Obama, you would say, look at, can't you see what he's doing to the country? Well, look, he's destroying the country.
To be fair, he's
apologizing all over the world for the United States. He's a terrorist. Can't you see that?
I definitely don't think it's the same thing. However, I do agree that there was a portion of Obama supporters, part of his base, that he screwed over regularly, and they were just like, yeah, Obama. And it's like, but no, not Obama. He didn't help you out with this, right? So I see what you're saying, but again, Trump is a lunatic.
Right. I'm not saying, I'm not arguing that they are right. I'm just saying that from their perspective, they could, you know, I'm trying to view it from the way they look at the world. Yeah, there's no question that I mean, but it is frustrating to look at this and think, how can you not see this? This is incredible. But all right, so they're kicking us out. But we are so appreciative that Anna could come on and outdo Steve-O in her first ever try at Weekly World News. I mean, very impressive debut. You know, perhaps even better than Brett Ehrlich's. But so thanks for watching. Have a great weekend, everybody. We appreciate our members. We love you guys. We thank you for watching the Friday Post Game. Have a great weekend. And as always, stay strong.